to the Naked Tarot Podcast with your host, Janet Boyer. Get ready to strip down with the most provocative voice in tarot.
Hello, and welcome to the Naked Tarot Podcast. I'm your host, Janet Boyer, otherwise known as the Tarot Maven. I'm the author of Back in Time Tarot, Tarot in Reverse, and the upcoming Naked Tarot, Sassy Strip Down Advice. With my artist husband, Ron Boyer, I am also the co-creator of the Snowland Deck and the Coffee Tarot. I invite you to visit my website, janetboyer.com, where hundreds of reviews and other goodies await. If you'd like to support my work, I am also on Patreon at patreon.com/janetboyer, where I have exclusive weekly tarot spreads, monthly AstroTarot forecasts, and other fun things just for my patrons. Today I'm going to be talking about Stranger Things, Truth, Illusion, and the Tarot. Yes, I am talking about that wildly popular Netflix show, Stranger Things. I admit I am slow to the party. I have 2 episodes to go on season 2, and I see so much symbolism in this, and so I'm going to just touch today on the symbolism of a curtain or the veil, as well as the high priestess and the magician and how they work in tandem at times. So if you haven't saw Stranger Things season 1 and 2 and you plan on to at some point, turn back now, okay? Because there's going to be some spoilers. I'm jumping right in. So just want to let you know, if you're interested in seeing the program, there's going to be spoilers. So turn back, all ye enter here, if you want to eventually see the show. Okay, if you're still with me, then you have seen the show and you love it, right? Oh my God, so good, right? I'm going to do a couple podcasts on Stranger Things and the archetypes, the roles that are in the party, like Mike the Paladin and Will the Cleric and Dustin the Bard, Lucas the Ranger, and Eleven the Mage we're going to talk about today. But I would like to dive in with a quote, and this is from season 2. This is the investigative reporter when Nancy and Jonathan go to see him and provide the tapes that they had undercover with one of the doctors at the Hawkins lab. And I just love this quote from the investigative reporter. And so I thought I'd share it and talk about how it relates to curtains and veils and truth and illusion and the magician and the high priestess. Here's the quote. They're not wired like me and you, okay? They don't spend their lives trying to get a look at what's behind the curtain. They like the curtain. It provides them stability, comfort, definition. This would open the curtain behind that curtain, okay? So the minute someone with an ounce of authority calls bullshit, everyone will nod their heads and say, see, ha, I knew it was bullshit. That is, if you even get their attention at all. Now, this reminds me of the fairy tale, The Emperor Has No Clothes, where these supposed magic tailors want to make these beautiful clothes for the emperor for a parade. And the emperor keeps giving money to these tailors who say they're still working on the beautiful clothes. They're almost ready. Now, the emperor doesn't see anything, and neither do his minions. But the tailors are so convincing, such wordsmiths, you know, and trying to convince that they're actually, you know, they're pretending like they're sewing and everything. And of course, the emperor doesn't want to look stupid or feel stupid. And so he says to his minions, oh, aren't the clothes beautiful? And the minions are looking at each other like, what? But they probably don't want to be fired from their jobs or worse, killed for insubordination. And so they support the emperor and they keep feeding into this lie, this illusion. Yes, yes, these clothes are so gorgeous. So time goes by. Money keeps being given to these tailors until finally they are supposedly done with these ornate, beautiful clothes just in time for the emperor to have a parade through the town. Now, if you know the fairy tale, as the emperor's going through, you know, the crowd is also looking at each other aghast that the emperor's naked. But because there's such fanfare, and those in authority said that the emperor has clothes, well, you know, they go along with it. You know, they don't want to have to think for themselves, or they don't want to be in danger of not being like the crowd, until a little boy points out, the emperor has no clothes. And then, of course, that gives everyone permission to see the truth, or I should say acknowledge the truth, because some people see the truth, but they will not acknowledge it or admit it or confront it. And then, you know, that's when they come out, oh my gosh, can you believe this? And they start laughing at the emperor. And it's a lot like this quote, you know, when somebody in authority calls the bullshit, everyone will nod their, you know, heads and say, see, hi, I knew it was bullshit. Sometimes the honesty of a child is enough authority, because it just cuts people to the quick, because children rarely lie. And at the end of the quote from that investigative report, he says, that is, if you even get their attention at all. So what does it mean to look at what's behind the curtain? Well, to me, this is an obvious homage to The Wizard of Oz, where Dorothy and Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion, they're going before the supposed Wizard of Oz to, you know, have their wish granted, because Dorothy wants to go home. And Toto escapes and starts tugging on the curtain. And, of course, the wizard is really just, you know, a man, this mayor of Munchkinland, who portrays himself as this big scary wizard through a mechanism. And Toto keeps, you know, trying to get behind the curtain, and dogs at the pant legs, and, you know, Dorothy was like, get back here. But then they see that there's something behind the curtain. And then that's when the, you know, booming illusion, scary green wizard goes, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, which has entered into popular culture. And for a reason, it's actually very archetypal and very symbolic. And so, as he says in this quote, and I'll repeat a bit of it, they're not wired like me and you, okay? Meaning the investigative journalist is saying, like me as an investigator, and some say a wacko conspiracy theorist, and you, Nancy and Jonathan, who are trying to get to the truth and expose it, they, meaning humanity in general, don't spend their lives trying to get a look at what's behind the curtain. They like the curtain. And he says it provides stability, comfort, and definition. And that's interesting, because it's true. Once that curtain was pulled away in The Wizard of Oz, you know, things started to break down. They realized that there wasn't this all-powerful wizard with magic powers. You know, immediately the stability of this all-wise, powerful creature was completely undone. And obviously it removed their comfort, you know, that there was going to be any help. And the definition of us who are normal and mundane, and something that is more powerful. And so this leads me to the magician and the high priestess. Now, if you're familiar with the Rider-Waite tarot, you will know that in the high priestess card, there is a pomegranate veil. There are two pillars, B and J, Boaz and Joachim. And then there's a pomegranate veil, and beyond that is water. Veils archetypally function just like a curtain do. They conceal, they disguise, and or they separate. Now, from the Islamic burqa to the gauzy masks of Turkish dancers, you know, to the white bridal coverings or black mourning garb, veils conceal all or parts of the face. Now, the high priestess doesn't wear a veil, but as I said, there is that thick tapestry veil connecting the two pillars. Now, according to the Bible, there was a thick curtain separating the holy place from the Holy of Holies in Solomon's temple. And that can be found in Hebrews 6:19, Hebrews 9:3, and Hebrews 10:20 in the New Testament. And it is referred to as a veil. Now, in Matthew 27:51, it's reported that the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth quaked and the rocks were split at the moment of Jesus' death. Now, Christian theologians say this signifies the ripping of the partition between man and God, allowing full access to divine communication without the need for a human mediator like a priest. Because the veil was ripped from top to bottom, it was an act of God, since it would have been much too high to be ripped by man, who would have started at the bottom. Now, if the Latin cross symbolizes the unequal balance of spiritual connection, because the vertical divine line's being longer, with a spiritual veil still intact, then the equal-armed Greek cross on the high priestess could connect to the post-torn veil state of union with and free access to God or the divine knowledge. Now, the Latin cross is the normal cross that we see, but notice that the vertical line is longer, as I said, and the horizontal shorter, but on the high priestess, they're equal-armed. And that can indicate, you know, once that veil is rent, once it's split, then you can access the divine, and you and the divine are on equal footing. So in mystical spirituality, it's said that a veil separates the living from the physically dead, and thus contact with spirits goes behind the veil. I mean, even during Samhain or Halloween, pagans often say that the veil is thinnest during that time. That is, the separation between the material and spiritual plane is more easily traversed. Now, Buddhism, Hinduism, and Sufism all tell us that truth or divine reality is hidden by a veil or a curtain. What is the veil or curtain made up of? Go ahead and think about that for a few seconds. What is the veil made up of? Well, it's made up of the clutter and noise of the five sense world, including our conditioning. But even Christianity and the New Testament talks a bit about this. The Apostle Paul says, you know, now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face, now I know in part, but even then I shall know, even as also I am known. A glass darkly basically translates as a bronze mirror. They used bronze back then as a mirror, and it was dark, and you really couldn't see yourself clearly. So it was now, you know, now we see through a glass darkly, meaning we don't see truth, we don't see things for what they really are. But someday we can, you know, see face to face the truth or the divine. And so that burnished or darkened mirror is, in some ways, is sort of like a veil as well. And sometimes in our waking world, we get flashes via synchronicity or visions or what have you, and we can see the other side. That, you know, the unconscious and the conscious finally meets, the unknown self versus the known self. And so it's interesting that Will sort of finds himself between worlds. You know, in Dungeons and Dragons, he's supposedly the cleric. And, you know, they have healing abilities. They have a domain over life and death. They can bring dead characters back to life. And they can either repel or control the undead characters. And so it's interesting, you know, because he figuratively comes back from the dead and was saved from the upside down world. And now he can connect with a parallel dimension sporadically. In some ways, I see Will also as like a hanged man figure. Sometimes he's in suspended reality when he was stuck in the upside down world, of course. But he also sees things in a different way, like the hanged man would. But he's also a lot like the high priestess because he speaks in symbols and symbolism. And that is how the high priestess works. I mean, Will can't fully articulate his experience in the upside down world and what he's going through. And so he relates those symbols via the drawings, like that map of the underground tunnels and, you know, that go underneath, and how the upside down world is infiltrating Hawkins's real world. So he has sort of like, you know, a foot in both worlds. Now, I mentioned the magician because 11 is called the mage. One of the boys says she's the mage of the party, meaning a magician, because obviously she has powers to, you know, move things with her mind. And so telekinesis, and she can also, to some extent, access the upside down world and other places in the real world. But also, there's number 8, her sister, who was at Hawkins with her. Her sister, who was called 8, or also she's called Callie. In some ways, she's a magician as well, because if you remember her powers, she has the ability to cast illusions. So she can, you know, cause people to see a wall where there is no wall. And so they'll, you know, like when the police were chasing him, they'd have to get, you know, on their brakes and slam on their brakes. Or like the one guy that was irritating her, he imagined, you know, she caused him to imagine spiders were all over him because he was deathly afraid of spiders. And so it's interesting that both 11 and 8, also known as Callie, you know, both function as different types of magicians. And the magician in tarot is one of the most rich because there's tons of permutations of the magician archetype. And I'll go over them in depth. I'll have an in-depth podcast on the magician and symbolism and things like that. But some of the permutations of the magician include shaman, a jester or trickster, the smooth operator communicator, the shaman. And what I want to talk about a little bit, especially in light of Stranger Things, is the wizard magician. Now, the term whiz kid or wizard denotes someone who is adept in a particular trade, skill, or predisposition. So savants are whizzes at math, music, or other disciplines. And magicians have the ability to juggle and pull off multiple feats with aplomb. So metaphorically, those who can multitask with ease and meld various interest ideas into something new, like inventors, entrepreneurs, writers, and artists, are in a sense magicians. Renaissance soul like Da Vinci would be this type of magician, as would Steve Jobs from Apple or Jeff Bezos from Amazon. Now, Pixar, the movie company that produced the first CGI movie in 1995, Toy Story, embodies magician archetype as well, both in terms of skill and the result. An offshoot of the wizard magician is the illusionist, who pretends to perform the miraculous, but is in fact fooling the audience with sleight of hand and smoke and mirrors with their consent. I mean, you know, you go to see an illusionist, you know, you suspend disbelief or belief to be entertained. And sometimes you're like, how in the world did they do that? You know, in some manifestations, like illusionist, you know, Chris Angel's feats, the results are awe-inspiring and mind-boggling. But nevertheless, they're able to be explained. Now, some illusions merely use the power of their words and peer pressure to perform their trickery. Just like in The Emperor's New Clothes, when I was talking about the shyster tailors pretend to weave clothing of the finest fabric, declaring only stupid people can't see their fine work. And of course, no one wants to appear stupid, so they deny what they see, which is nothing, and agree that the Emperor's garb is the finest they have ever seen. It takes a clear-eyed child, which is the fool, really, if you think about it, the fool archetype, to speak the truth, which is the Emperor has no clothes, much to the horror of everyone. So the fool has not yet been sullied with peer pressure. You know, that's one of the benefits of the fool, the tabula rasa, the blank slate. The fool hasn't yet gone through life experience, and also that means conditioning and peer pressure. So since he hasn't been sullied with that or the societal expectations or ingrained, you know, mores, the fool is able to evaporate those gossamer lies of the shadow magician. And so it's interesting that the investigative journalist, you know, in talking about basically Hawkins' lab and the lies that they have weaved since MKUltra back in the 60s, you know, he's trying to expose these conspiracies. But then he goes and says, you know, they're not wired like me and you, okay? They don't spend their lives trying to get a look at what's behind the curtain. They like the curtain. It provides them stability, comfort, and definition. And so that's really powerful because, you know, in tarot, a lot of times the magician ends up being one of the most famous and loved cards of the tarot. People like to be like the magician or they honor the magician. But the magician can be on a shadow side, can be very deceptive. And, you know, just like the weavers, the tailors for the emperor making nothing, you know, it's complete bullshit, you know. And so that is the power of the shadow magician. It can weave a spell just like Callie, who's also, you know, known as 8 in Stranger Things, can weave an illusion. And that is a type of magician because then it influences what a person perceives and sees and believes. And if you can influence what a person sees and believes, you influence how they act and what they do or don't do. And so then, you know, then there's the high priestess, you know, talking about the veil. And there are a lot of veils or curtains in Stranger Things wanting, you know, and now people are starting to want to see behind the veil. They want to know the truth. They want to know what's really going on. And they're starting to dig for truth. And literally in the ground and all around. And that's like the high priestess, you know, there's that veil there. And the high priestess doesn't give information. I mean, that's why a lot of times they equate the high priestess with silence, and esoterica, the occult, and mysteries, because she never gives anything freely. You have to actually dig and try to get behind that veil to find out what the wisdom is, what's on that scroll that she's holding. And even if you do get access to the scroll, she may only speak in symbols anyway. And there's that deep water behind her, the subconscious, the universal archetypes, things that you have to dig and reveal and unveil, literally unveil and or reveal. And that's interesting because I believe that the French verb to reveal is reveal, V-E-I-L, to reveal, meaning to uncover. And so when you want to reveal the truth, you know, you have to push back that curtain, or you have to, you know, try to gain access to the high priestess scroll or peek behind the veil. And but if you have the magician there who is trying to weave lies, weave a fake tapestry, so to speak, you can think you have accessed the truth, but all you have accessed is a curtain of bullshit. And so, you know, well, like I said, in future podcasts, I'll talk about different permutations of the magician, especially the positive aspects. But let's not forget the deceptive and negative aspects of a magician, and how illusion can be weaved, and we can be conscious part of that illusion by going along with it and refusing to speak the truth as we see it. Or just keep our eyes closed and say, well, I don't want to deal with it. So just some food for thought for you guys about Stranger Things, the nature of truth, illusion, the symbolism of the veil in tarot, especially with the High Priestess, you know, the occult hidden information that's in the scrolls, and how you get to truth and how you get to knowing the fullness of yourself and reality. And the magician, who can sometimes cast spells, and they can be deceiving ones. So keep your eyes open, and I'll be talking more about Stranger Things archetypes and how they relate to tarot, as well as the magician in more full measure. And so I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And again, this is Jana Boyer, Naked Tarot Podcast. Visit me at janaboyer.com, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.